anymore.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cruz. Mrs. Brooks, I think it's important to recall why we're here. I mean, the public auditor and the Office of Public Accountability is here to, among other things, other important things, is to try to promote the integrity of the procurement process in Guam and, you know, increase the public's confidence that the system is doing what it's supposed to do. I think, in the case of my client, ASC Trust Corporation, they have a lot of reasons to be skeptical about the process. In 2004, they offered their services to the fund. Pursuant to an RFP where price was not a factor to be evaluated in a way we can determine who would be the first best qualified, and they were found to be the best qualified but didn't get the contract. 2 years later, and hundreds of thousands of dollars more paid to the incumbent, they responded to a second RFP. That RFP changed the evaluation criteria and added price as a factor that would be considered. And based on their understanding of what that meant, they offered what they felt was a very, very favorable to the fund pricing proposal. And nonetheless, they didn't get the contract either. And they thought that, and they recognized, Mr. John recognizes, he says he respects the process, there was a differently composed panel of evaluators, presentations can change, written, oral, whatever, but on price factor, his assumption was we made a really good proposal and we probably at least had an advantage there on a competitive basis. As it turns out, we believe he did, but he was, the ASC was robbed of that advantage by what we feel was basically incomprehensible to us interpretation of an application of the evaluation criteria set forth in RFP. Now, I recognize, and I think Mr. Cruz used a term, I think, when he compared the way he approached evaluating the price proposals to that of Ms. Typino, and he says, she looked at it through a different lens. And I think that's really true what we are. We're looking at it through a different lens also. And the concern I have, and I think the concern the public auditor should have, is that there shouldn't be different lenses that people are looking through to evaluate proposals and process procurements. That transparency, by definition, is lost if people are using different lenses. We should all be looking through these procurements and these procurement factors with the same lens. So I think this is an instructive case study in that. First of all, I think it's important to focus back on the mode of procurement we have, which is the one for professional services, where competitive sealed proposals requests for proposals are permitted. Public auditor's rule, that it's Supreme Court of Guam's rule, that the other form of competitive sealed proposals is not an acceptable mode in Guam. That's a policy decision made by the legislature, with which I personally disagree. I think it's foolish and it costs the government of Guam a lot of money to not have that tool available to procurement officers. But the fact is it's not there. Many of the cases cited by the fund's attorneys in their filings are cases under the federal equivalent of the competitive sealed proposals mode of procurement, which we don't have in Guam. That's where you have different proponents, you rate them all, and then you negotiate with them head-to-head, not with one, but with all three at the same time, and you try to get the best deal you can for the government. We don't have that system. That mode is not allowed in Guam. Instead, we have a system for professional services, which that's a sphere that we believe this one falls in, for sure. Where the law and the regulations contemplate that at least in the initial evaluation stage, price will not be a factor, like it was in the 2004 RFP, the way that Ms. Tyfino viewed it was that you evaluate the capabilities and the proposals of the disciplined proponents, and you rank them in an order of who's best ranked, next ranked, third ranked. And then only then you open the pricing proposal of the first ranked offeror, and you never even see what the prices that were offered by the others. So there's nothing to compare. If you can make a deal, those proposals, those pricing proposals of the lower ranked offerors is never even seen. So who knows what the government would get. The fund did not choose that method in this case. In 2006, they said, we're going to consider price in the initial evaluation, and we're going to give it 40% of the weight based on these weighted criteria, on the technical criteria. We're going to give 60% of the weight to that and 40% to price. Anyone, we submit, reading that would think that a better price to the fund should be given a higher numerical rating on a scale of 1 to 10. And it's inconceivable to us that a proposal that's going to cost the fund more money would get a higher rating. Putting aside the technical qualifications, the superiority or inferiority of those proponents on the technical criteria, which was only given 60% or majority of the weight for the purposes of the initial evaluation. So again, the lens we're looking at it is what we think is the common sense lens. Price is 40%. Means price is worth 40%. That's the criteria that the fund told people they would follow, and that's the one they should be expected to have followed, and not some ad hoc procedures where apparently the evaluators, and we focused on these types, you know, used a different criteria where not that technical capabilities or superiority of the technical aspects was not just 60%. It became much more than 60% because it was allowed to shape and color the evaluation of the pricing proposal. And so we, you know, wasn't the grounds we protested on, but I think it's been revealed by the evidence, is that that Ms. Tyfino did not apply the criteria set forth in the RFP, which is itself improper. Not that I don't understand, I think as all of us I think understood what her way of thinking. She's explained it, I think, very well today. We just believe it was improper and not in accordance with the requirements of law that only the criteria set forth in the RFP are used to evaluate, not some hybrid or some one person's view of it. The other thing, again, that is difficult to understand is how is it that you can rate a price proposal without having some conception of what it's going to cost in terms of dollars. And, you know, we've maybe taken an overly simplistic view of that, but we don't understand how else you can do it. How do you rate on a scale of 1 to 10 a proposal if price is a price, not price in, or net price methodology, price is 40%. And so you have to have some notion of what the price is going to be. I think the RP encouraged, if not required, the proponents to give a summary of their how it is. So ASC did that in the page of their price proposal where they summarized how it's going to add up and how they projected in dollars and cents what it would what it would result in. Mr. Cruz said he thought that Great West did the same thing, but we've never seen that. We used Mr. So that's why we used the same information that ASC used, which comes from the RFP itself, to extrapolate what that translated into in dollars and cents. And the difference is rather startling in terms of hundreds of thousands of dollars difference in those proposals in what they would have done. Now, it would be different, I suppose, if we had, you know, there was this other proposal and we weren't sure which one Ms. Tyfonneau was, you know, rating, but she wrote on her evaluation sheet no, and she clarified today she didn't even consider option two. She's only considering option one. And this notion that we can assign 40% of the evaluation criteria at the initial evaluation stage because we can forget about pricing when we get into the negotiation stage, again, it means that the criteria set forth in the RFP was meaningless. It was rendered meaningless. And how, again, that doesn't promote confidence in the system if you can tell bidders that you're going to be evaluated on this basis and then individual evaluators can just, you know, forget it and not give disregard or give no regard to the criteria that was spelled out. So we believe that the evidence shows that by any objective analysis, the pricing proposal of ASC, which it submitted, compared on an apples-to-apples basis with the only one that Ms. Tyfonneau rated, that apples-to-apples comparison of those two is unquestionably the one that ASC proposed was far more favorable to the fund and its members, resulting in a far less cost to the fund and its members, and therefore should have been given a higher score for the purposes of that initial evaluation. That did not happen. And we believe that the fact that it did not happen means that the criteria set forth were not followed and that the result is not reasonable or rational, and if it's not reasonable or rational, by definition, it becomes arbitrary and capricious. And for those reasons, it should be overturned, the result. Now, this wouldn't make any difference if that scoring didn't impact the total combined score. And again, the RFP was quite specific as to how the best qualified offeror would be determined. They would be evaluated on those evaluation criteria, they would be added up, or then and only then would the price proposals be opened. So I have to assume that that all happened on February 7, 2007, that's the day they did their score sheets, added them up, and then opened the proposals, and I don't know how much time they could have had to think about it. They rated them, and they gave the scores that they were then added up, and the result is, because of this skewed scoring on this by this one evaluator, on this one criteria, which was given a specific rate to be assigned to it, change the outcome of that total combined score. So instead of finishing first, it finished second, PSC. So having been the best qualified offer, it should have been the best qualified offers again, but did it in the way we view it, and was again denied a contract. Again, not much confidence in the system. Now, I think the issue that's before you is whether or not when an agency in its RFP establishes and sets a specific weight to be given to price, can that number be shaped by other, quote, qualitative factors that are separately valued and separately evaluated and separately weighted? We're submitting no. I mean, that again, makes the criteria meaningless. Now, so the issues we have are pretty simple. The fund's attorney delved into the technical criteria. ASC and Mr. John May disagreed, you know, passionately with how his company or its presentation was viewed by Ms. Titano or Mr. Cruz or the other evaluator. May disagree. Think they were given a raw deal, that they weren't fair, that they were biased, whatever. None of that was protested. We didn't raise those issues as much as we might believe that was the case. If you look at those comptroller general cases cited by the fund in one of their briefs or filings, you read those cases, and the comptroller general painstakingly has to deal with or deals with those negotiated procurements where the different proponents quibble over how they were ranked or evaluated on this criteria, that criteria. They get into these intense factual determinations as to whether or not the evaluators had a reasonable basis to evaluate this particular person in a particular way, or the mode of construction or whatever they were proposing, in excruciating detail. We haven't asked the public auditor to do that. And again, Mr. John is not worried about that. He asked for this information originally to find out why did he lose? What did we do wrong? How could we have made our presentation better? Where were we perceived as being weak? So next time we can beef up that part of our presentation and make me, you know, get a better result next time. It was the last thing he expected to find is that he lost on one scorecard to a higher price proposal. And that higher price, that one score on that one scorecard, changed the result and deprived them of the opportunity to have been awarded this contract. So we think these are important issues. We need a single set of lenses to look through that are not different, not colored, you know, not bifocal or trifocal. We need the same set of lenses to view these processes if there's going to be confidence in the system. Now, the fund has not, you know, they've dealt with it in their final papers that they filed, but they've taken the position that, gee, you know, it's been a long time. Mr. John and his company should have protested a long time ago. They knew they weren't rated number one way back in 2007, which is true, and we don't disagree with that. But so what? You know, there's winners and losers in every procurement. That doesn't mean there's a basis to a protest in every procurement, unless that's the rule that the public auditor wants to establish. Whether you have a basis to protest or not, you better do it or you'll lose the opportunity later, because according to the fund, you have to protest now, ask questions, look around, find out if there's a basis to figure out whether you have, or you're not going to be allowed to do so later because you waited too long. That can't be a rule that this the public auditor in this office should support. It's mind-boggling to me, quite frankly, that it would even be suggested. So instead, what Mr. John did was very responsibly wait until the law permitted him to obtain the information through the Freedom of Information Act. Again, not with the expectation that it was going to create, he was going to unearth some grounds for a protest, but rather to learn what are the weaknesses in their presentation. But lo and behold, he learns to create effort that there was something wrong in our view, his view. Now, I think it's an easy reading of the fund's position with Mr. John on his request for information shows that the fund has taken completely contradictory positions on this. When he asked for the information after the notice of award, when the Great West proposal and the information related to it was no longer confidential, he asked for it under the Sunshine Act. The fund's response was, we can't give it to you under the Sunshine Act because you're barred under the procurement law from giving it to you as a member of the public. We are barred from giving it the procurement law. It's not the only reason that we can't give it to the Sunshine Law is because we're barred from giving it to you under the procurement law. But after lots of efforts and after we filed the writ for mandamus, is you should ask. Well, first of all, he said this isn't covered by the procurement law. This isn't covered by the categories of what it is. If you look at the letters we've exchanged, the fund took the position. We said this isn't anything that relates to the proposals of the non-winning proponent, which is confidential under the procurement law, and the regulation you cite is why you can't give it to us under the Sunshine Law, because you're barred by the procurement law. They say, the fund's position is that necessarily any information on those evaluation sheets reveals information about your proposal when we're barred by the procurement law from giving it to you. Barred by the procurement law from giving it to you. And we said, that can't be so. Since there's no information, look, here's the Great West valuation sheets. It doesn't say anything about the proposals. It's the same criteria set forth in RFP with a number next to it. It says nothing. And we only asked for the summary sheets. We didn't ask for the individual sheets. But after we filed for the writ, I get a call. It was, we thought you understood. If you ask for it not as a member of the public, but if you ask for it as an offeror, we can give it to you under the procurement law. The same law that bars us from giving it to you, if it only asked for it, we could have given it to you under the law that we said barred it, we were barred from giving it to you under. That is just double speak, double talk. How can you rely on the procurement law and say we can't give it to you, and then say, but if you ask for it under the procurement law, we can. And there's a letter in the record where the fund's attorney states your status as an offeror makes no difference until we sued you, and then in court, and then of course it makes a difference. That is simply a charade. There's just no legal analysis that would support that 100%, 180-degree turnaround. Either they would allowed it all along, we should have been given it all along, or we weren't allowed it. But the fact of the matter is, the information was not provided to Mr. John until October 6, 2009, when we finally received the evaluation sheets of the ASE proposal, which showed that his proposal had been given a 5 compared to the 9 that Great West had been giving on its higher pricing proposal, and that in adding up the numbers, that 9 and that 5 changed the result. That if even if they'd been given the same score, a 5 and a 5, a 7 and a 7, that ASC would have won, been deemed, had the highest combined score. So it affected the outcome. And for that reason, the protest, once the facts that gave rise to it became known, was timely because it was filed within 14 days of that date. The last issue I think that the fund has raised is this, the jurisdiction to consider this. It's very curious to me. They rely on the recent decision of the GCIF case that says if, you know, where it said the public auditor wouldn't review an issue that wasn't covered by the decision of the agency below. But in that case, the distinction is it wasn't raised either by the, there was no protest on that point. So it wasn't raised by the contractor, and it wasn't, therefore it wasn't discussed. And I can understand why the public auditor is going to say, we're not going to rule on something that nobody's even raised or discussed. We raised it. They chose not to discuss it. They chose instead to put all their eggs in this untimeliness basket that Uber's raised. The fact that they ignored it cannot deprive you of the right to decide it. It's our position. Otherwise, any agency could just not decide. We could never appeal. We just will ignore that ground for your protest, and therefore you can't raise it with the public auditor because we just chose not to make a decision on it. This cannot be. If again, the distinction is we raised it, they didn't decide it wasn't raised by anybody and not decided by anybody. But the result is, I guess, that they want you to say, okay, assuming we agree with ASC that this protest was timely, remand it back so they can take the position we know they're going to take. I don't expect they're going to change their mind and argue any differently than they have, and we can have a second appeal once they say what we know they're going to say, and we can waste all that time, and then they can blame us for delaying the process. So I think the real issues here then are putting aside this jurisdiction issue, which we think is bogus, the timeliness issue. I mean, there can't be any question that, you know, no contractor acted more responsibly and diligently than ASC to do when it had the right to do it, ask for information that was up to that point in time confidential, and which has been confidential the same kind of information. They've declared it to be confidential in the last appeal, in other cases, and to ASC itself. So that's the thing. So we get back to then what's the real issue here, and that is, again, this lens issue. What is the lens that anyone looking at that RFP would assume? We think there's only one reasonable interpretation of it, that the criteria were set forth. The criteria weren't properly applied by one of the evaluators, that evaluator deviated or disregarded the criteria, deviated from or disregarded the criteria, and that as a result, ASC would have been, the result of that is that ASC would have been deemed the best qualified offeror. The original negotiations would have been with ASC, and as Mr. Cruz said, ASC was going to be the least room for negotiation. Because ASC's offer was the closest, Mr. John said the same thing, so the only reasonable conclusion, there would have been a reasonable likelihood that ASC would have been awarded the contract if it had been given the first crack at it like it should have, and it would have entered into a contract 2 years ago and saved the fund hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last 2 years. So that's all I have to say at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Cruz. I think Mr. Blair summarized it pretty accurately when he said that, you know, the purpose of the procurement rules is, you know, to protect the integrity of the procurement system. And I still don't see anything before the OPA that establishes that the integrity has been breached by the fund in this case. In fact, if we go back to the very basis of the procurement regulations, the fund was all evidence of the acts of the fund and its evaluators in this solicitation only show that everyone was exercising fair and equitable treatment of all persons who deal with the procurement system of this territory. And that's one of the stated policies in the procurement regulations. First of all, with regard to the timeliness of the appeal or timeliness of the protest itself, going back to the days when, back in 2007, when ASC was first notified that it was not the best qualified offeror in 2007. That, the fund argues, is the point where it should have known, it knew or should have known, that there was a basis for a protest. Now, there's all this talk about the RFP from 2004, and ASC should have, you know, been awarded the contract way back in 2004, but it didn't. But then again, you know, the cancellation of that solicitation then eventually ended up, they're tying the 2004 solicitation to this 2006 solicitation. Now, when the 2006 solicitation came out and the notification went out to all of the offerors that, you know, GWRS was basically the one who had ranked higher than everyone else, by notification that, for example, in ASC's case, it was not ranked the best offeror, then that's when ASC should have been alerted by saying, wait a minute, you know, why were we so good in 2004 and now our qualifications or something has gone on that we are not now ranked the best offeror? And then in July of 2007, when the agency report came out and it said, you know, these are the factors that compel the fund to stop negotiations with Great West and try to start negotiations with ASC, that this was the pricing scheme and that it was 2.7% that was offered by GWRS, whereas the cost proposal, as you saw, from ASC was 0.25%. Something should have alerted them back then that, you know, maybe these are grounds for protest. And this is all an action that is contemplated within the procurement regulations. When there's a situation that comes up and there are facts that may establish that, look, something might have gone wrong in the procurement process, whether or not it be a mistake, and there's considerations for mistakes. There are sometimes, you know, the fund acknowledges that at some point sometimes things get transposed or numbers might not get calculated correctly. There are situations where perhaps there might have been a mistake. And there are, the regulations contemplate that. It says, you know, file within 14 days. And sometimes information may not be readily available, and the fund or the procurement regulations also address that. I believe it's section 9101, where it talks about information that is made available during a protest. And if the information is not made readily available at that time, you're supposed to tell the OPA when that information will be made available. So, you know, to say now that you will, you know, ASC just wanted to find out what the weaknesses were in their presentation, and that's why the request was made pursuant to the Sunshine Act. You know, under the circumstances, the fund, who has to address numerous other protests, can't just say, okay, we'll give this information to you pursuant to the Sunshine Act, when there are provisions within the procurement regulations which allow for the dissemination of some information when the time is right. And to say now that it was confidential and they wouldn't have provided us the information even if they had asked the fund for it, it's just speculative, and there's no basis to say that that might have been the case at that point in time. As far as the substantive, or going back to the timeliness issue again, Mr. John testified that he was represented by counsel at the time of the GWRS appeal. They stipulated that they did receive the agency report, all the information that would have given rise to any kind of knowledge with regard to a protest regarding revaluation, how it was ranked, and that kind of information was already made available back in 2007. So, again, that issue has been briefed ad nauseum, I think, and we've discussed the rationale behind why the timeliness issue is such a factor. The decision was made only based on Section 9101 of the procurement regulations that says if a protest is not timely filed, the agency has to just not even consider it. Therefore, the agency decision didn't address any of the substantive issues. So coming now before the OPA and saying, well, you know, this is the problem is that there is arbitrariness and there's capriciousness, and one evaluator skewed the process. Well, that's wrong, because that determination was never made by the agency. And there's nothing to say today that, you know, oh, let's go back and go and have the same argument in front of the agency right now. Well, the agency should have been the first line of protest, but for the untimeliness of the protest itself. So, you know, you can't, it just seems that, you know, they're trying to argue now that, well, we might not have been timely, but really we should have, we only knew now because we asked pursuant to a Sunshine Act request, which was improper to begin with. The procurement process set forth all the procedures for obtaining the information that you're basing your protest on, and they just did it the wrong way. And it's not the fund's fault that they did it the wrong way. You just need to follow the regulations. And that's basically what this rule regarding the 14-day deadline sets forth is, look, if you miss your deadline, the agency just does not consider it. It's pretty simple. Now, as far as the substantive claims are concerned, the arbitrariness, again, looking at all the evidence that has been presented today, there's nothing that shows that Ms. Tycano's evaluation has skewed the process. In fact, both of the evaluators agreed that that they both followed all of the enumerated criteria set forth in the RFP. They looked at it, yes, they had the same criteria, but as Mr. Blair summarizes, yes, they looked at it through different lens, which is also what Mr. Cruz said. But that's the point of the different evaluators being in looking at an RFP, a response to an RFP, is they look at what the criteria is, and based on the individual, because they're not supposed to sit there and commensurate about, oh, I'm giving this person a 7, I'm giving this person a 6. They each put their own experience, their own subjective evaluations into the criteria. And that they both have addressed that issue and said, you cannot evaluate the price in a vacuum. They both have said that, yes, I looked at the pricing scheme, but Ms. Tycano looked at the qualifications, and based on her evaluation, she believed that the qualifications of GWRS permitted the higher price, but that was okay because they were getting their bang for the buck, basically. And Mr. Cruz testified that, well, yeah, I looked at the pricing scheme and the methodology, but I also looked at the people behind the numbers. You can't just evaluate price in a vacuum. So ASB would have you just look at the price, the bottom line, and both of the evaluators today said, no, you cannot just look at the number at the end of the line and say, yes, I'm going to rank you higher because that's your bottom line, and it's much lower than this guy's bottom line. And that's not what was set forth in the RFP either. It never said anywhere in the technical specifications regarding evaluation that a lower price necessarily should be ranked higher in terms of evaluation. So, and then, you know, what about the third evaluator? He just ranked them by both equally, but no one questioned him. Why would a lower price be ranked the same as a higher price? That was never coming into play. And so again, the question of whether or not you're supposed to use the different lenses or whatever that means, the point is the evaluators today both testified that they considered each and every qualitative criteria when they ranked the technical merits. And then in looking at the pricing, they also considered not just the bottom line or the number, but number one, the people behind it, which is essentially what Ms. Tycano did. And to say that she is the one who skewed the whole evaluation process, I think, is unfair to her. It doesn't show any kind of arbitrariness or capriciousness on her part. In fact, it actually shows that she considered things other than, that she considered things that were within the technical specifications and things that she was required to do. And as this agency has ruled in the GCIF appeal, they did their job. They were following whatever was in the scoring sheet. They followed what was in the evaluation criteria set forth in the RFP. And ASC might not agree with it, but they did their job, and that's all that is required of them. And again, there's nothing to show that anything was, that there was any kind of bias for GWRS or against ASC in how they made their determinations or their scoring. We talked about the process. Again, if Mr. Blair is concerned or if ASC is concerned with this is just the bottom line, you know, we have the lower price. Well, the testimony today again was there is a solicitation method for that, and that's the ISC. If you want something that is the lowest price, then you're going to use the invitation for bid. You're not going to use the RFP process, and that's just plain and simple. I think that the way that the evaluators had treated the criteria, it's the same way, analogous to how, for example, Great West came up with a different pricing scheme. You're given a set of requirements which the evaluators looked at and said, okay, I need to evaluate all of the proposals based on this set of criteria. Similarly, all of the offerers looked at the scope of proposals and said, okay, I'm looking at this pricing scheme. I need to come up with a pricing scheme. And one of the offerers, or two of the offerers, came up with, Great West came up with option one and option two. And that's how they interpreted, you know, the best means of sending forth a proposal on price. Whereas ASC said, this is it. Here's my option. This is the only thing. In the same way that criteria could be looked at by the evaluators, and one should see one thing and another sees another. Completely, maybe, like it did here, completely opposite opinions about how to go about executing the evaluation. Neither one of them was wrong, and neither one of them was arbitrary or capricious. In fact, both of them sat there and told you how they arrived at each scoring. Ms. Tysonos was, I went through it and said, okay, what was your whole thought process when you gave this Great West score? Or what was it when you gave ASC this score? So there was nothing that showed that she just randomly picked a number out of the air. Each one of the evaluators today said, I looked at their proposal, scored it based on what I thought the numbering system that we were given. I weighted it individually. I didn't compare them and then say, GWRS should have an 8 versus Liberty and Bank of Hawaii, which is a 5, because the two of them, you know, comparatively, that's how they should be ranked. Therefore, let me look at ASC. None of them did it that way. Both of them testified that they looked at the proposals individually and scored them according to that 1 to 10 factor. Again, ASC has the burden of showing that there was an arbitrary or capricious act that occurred during the solicitation, and they just haven't done that. In fact, one of the things that is being ignored is the whole idea that at some point during the solicitation process, the funds attempted to cease negotiations with Great West because they couldn't reach that final number and go on to ASC. And the point being, with my showing or illustrating that, is that the funds doesn't necessarily care who the individual is. They're not going to be biased one way or another as far as who gets the contract. The idea is get the best deal for the territory, which is exactly what happened in this case. There's testimony by Ms. Bloss that, yes, we got a more favorable contract in the end than we do with, than we have had in the past. So it's an even better result than it was. And isn't that the whole idea behind the solicitation and the process? And there's nothing to establish that the integrity of the procurement process or that Ms. Tysonneau has been biased against ASC or in favor of GWRS. So we respectfully request that the appeal be denied.
Okay. Any rebuttal?
Just very briefly, if I might. there's this discussion of price in a vacuum. And I tried to figure that's what we've been saying, but it's price in a dollar's vacuum. I mean, there's a price, it was a criteria, it wasn't made a criteria by ASC, it was made a criteria by the fund. And to say that price, to me, has a, there's a dollar sign in there somewhere, but if no one has to try to assign a dollar sign to a pricing proposal, then it is truly in a vacuum. What is the point of reference? Certainly, ASC believed that price meant dollars and cents, and what's the how much is this going to cost the fund and its members? But Ms. Tycho apparently didn't think of that at all. That the price was really no object. Although, we're at the evaluation, or the initial evaluation stage. Obviously, everyone testified that later on we can talk about it, but we're talking about what the RFP said at the initial evaluation stage to be who would be the first person to be negotiating with. And that, it did count. It counted for 40%. And all we can just say is, it's 40%, it's got to be, that's a substantial weight of the overall combined score, and it just can't be ignored, as the fund would want you to do. That's all, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burr. Yes, okay. And when would you be able to submit that analysis that was requested?
I'll go back to the office and
That analysis only talks about we were comparing to Oregon, New Mexico, Texas, and doesn't say how that funding compared to what you were analyzing.
Right. What we're trying to do here is just basically get an idea of how they reduced or how they calculated the group funding and the treatment and 401s and 67. But I'll go ahead and get the working documents that we used to compare the two.
And we might expect that when?
I can see if I can get to you tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Within the next 2 day or so.
Okay.
Thank you. And a copy to you as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And once we receive that, of course, we'll make the decision. Again, the public auditor is a policy of trying to get these decided quickly. So within the next, hopefully within the next 30 days, certainly, we expect to have the decision issue. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Don't do that 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm.